Did you wonder why he wants a new mate now? Did you ask if he already has a mate, or if he ever had one?
Not exactly. He said he had been waiting for just the right woman, Amelana said, frowning.
Just the right woman to help his first woman take care of her 5 children.
His first woman? 5 children?
Amelana's frown deepened.
He didn't say anything about 5 children.
Did you ask him?
No, but why didn't he tell me?
Because he didn't have to, Amelana. You didn't ask him. His mate told him to find another woman to help her. But everyone here knows he already has one woman and her children at his hearth. Since she's his first, she would have the status and the say. She's the one who brings the status to that arrangement in any case. He doesn't have much besides good looks and a charming way. We're leaving tomorrow. If you decide to mate him, no one here will bring you back home to your mother's cave.
I am not staying here,
Amelana said angrily.
But why would he trick me like that? Why didn't he tell me?
You're an attractive woman, Amelana, but very young, and you like attention. He will no doubt find a second woman, but she won't be young and pretty, with no one to stand up for her once we're gone. That is what he'd rather have. That is why you are so right for him. The woman he'll find will likely be older, maybe not very attractive. She may have a couple children of her own, or if he's lucky, she'll be a woman who couldn't have children and will be happy to find a charming man with a family, willing to take her in and make her part of his family. I'm sure that's what his first woman is hoping for, not a pretty young woman who will leave with the first man who makes her a better offer. I'm sure that's what you would do, even if it means you would lose status. Amelana looked shocked at the first straightforward remarks. Then she started to cry.
Am I really that bad?
I didn't say you were bad, Amelana. I said you were young, and like most attractive young women, especially those with high status, you are used to getting your own way. But you have a child on the way. You are going to have to learn to put your child's needs ahead of your own wants.
I don't want to be a bad mother, Amelana wailed. But what if I don't know how to be a good mother?
You will be, Ayla said, speaking for the first time, especially once you are home with your mother. She will help you, and even if you didn't have a mother, you would fall in love with your baby just like most mothers do. It's the way the Great Mother made women, at least most women, and many men, too. You are a loving person, Amelana. You will be a fine mother.
The first smiled. Why don't you go and get your things ready, Amelana? She said more kindly. We'll be leaving early tomorrow. The company of travelers set out the next day, following one of the 3 rivers that came together near the 7th cave of Southland Zelandanyi. They used the shallow crossing place at the campsite to reach the other side and kept the river's meandering course in the beginning. Then, rather than following the twists and turns of the waterway, they decided to strike out across country, heading more east than south. This was all new country to Ayla and to John Ayla, of course, but she was so young, it was unlikely that she would remember when she got older that she had been this way before. It was unfamiliar to Jondalar as well, though he knew he had been here with Willemar and his mother and Marthona's other children. Jonacol hadn't traveled much, so it was new to him as well, and Amelana didn't recall anything about the region, though she had come through it from her southern cave. It just wasn't anything she paid attention to at the time. Her mind had been filled with her exciting new mate, who couldn't seem to stay away from her, and daydreams about her new home. The first had been in the general vicinity several times,
but not for quite a while, and she didn't recall it, except in a general way. It was the trade master who knew it well. He had brought his two assistants before, but they would need to know it equally well. Willemar was looking for certain landmarks to help him guide the way. As they traveled, the landscape was changing in subtle ways every day. They were gaining elevation, and the country was becoming more rugged. There were more limestone outcrops, often accompanied by brush and even small woods growing around them, and less open grassland. Though they were increasing altitude, it was also gradually warming as the summer wore on, and the vegetation was changing as they journeyed south. They saw fewer coniferous trees, like spruces, firs, and junipers, and more deciduous types, like larches, and the small-leaf varieties such as willows and birches, also fruit and nut trees, and occasionally big-leaf maples and oaks. Even the grasses changed, less ryegrass, and more of the wheat types, such as emmer and spelt, although mixed fields were common, which included triticale and many herbaceous plants. While traveling, they hunted a variety of large and small game as they came upon it, and gathered the vegetable produce that grew so abundantly at this time of year. But they weren't thinking about storing for future use, so their needs were not great. Except for John Ayla, they were healthy adults who were capable of foraging for food and taking care of themselves. The large woman did not hunt or gather, but as the first, she contributed in her own way. She walked some of the time, and the more she did, the more she was able to, but when she got tired, she rode the travoy and did not slow them down. It was primarily Winnie who pulled her on her special pole drag, but Ayla and Jondalar were training the other horses to pull the large travoy as well. Though they moved slowly enough that the horses could graze along the way, especially in the morning and evening, they made good time, and with the weather remaining pleasant, their trek felt like an agreeable excursion. They had been traveling for several days, heading generally southeast. Then, one morning, Willemar started out due east, at times even a little north, almost as though he was following a trail. They climbed up around a jutting ridge, and behind it there was a trail, but barely wide enough for the extended legs of the first's pole drag.
"Perhaps you should walk, Celandani," Willemar said. "It's not much farther."
"Yes, I think I will," she said. "If I recall right, the trail narrows more up ahead."
"There is a wide spot around the next bend. You might want to leave the pole drag there, Ayla,"
Willemar suggested.
"I don't think the trail will accommodate it."
"Pole drags don't do well on steep trails. We found that out before," she said, including Jondalar with a glance.
When they reached the wide place, they helped the Danyer down and proceeded to unhitch the conveyance. Then they continued walking up the trail, with Willemar in the lead and the rest of the travelers behind him. Ayla, Jondalar, and John Ayla, with the animals, brought up the rear. They traversed a few more legs of the zigzag path and one steep climb up the trail, and suddenly found themselves on a relatively broad grassy shelf, at the back of which, amidst the smoke of a few fires, was a collection of rather substantial shelters made of wood and hides, with grass-thatch roofs. A crowd of people was standing in front of the dwellings facing the approaching visitors, but Ayla could not tell if they were especially glad to see them. They seemed defensive. No one was smiling, and some held spears, though they were not aimed at anyone. Ayla had seen that kind of reception before and subtly signaled the wolf to stay close. She could hear the slight rumble in his throat as he moved in front of her in a protective stance. She looked at Jondalar, who had put himself in front of John Ayla and held her there, though she struggled to see around him. The horses were prancing lightly with nervousness, and their ears were pricked forward. Jondalar took a better grip on the lead ropes of Racer and Gray and looked toward Ayla as she put a hand on Winnie's neck.
Willemar, a voice called out. Is that you? Ferendahl, of course it's me, and a few others, mostly from the Ninth Cave. I thought you'd be expecting us. Aren't Kimmeran and Jondakam here yet?
Willemar said.
No, they aren't, Ferendahl said. Should they be?
Are they coming? A female voice said with a happy touch of excitement.
We expected them to be here already. No wonder you look so surprised to see us, Willemar said. You are not the one who surprises me, Ferendahl said with a sardonic look. I think some introductions are in order, Willemar said. I'll begin with the first among those who serve the Great Earth Mother.
Ferendahl gaped, then caught himself and stepped forward. Once he looked more closely, he recognized her, both from her general description and from her tattoos. He had met her before, but it had been some time, and they had both changed since then.
In the name of Dani, you are welcome, Zelandani the First, he said, then held out both hands and continued with the formal greeting.
The rest of the travelers were introduced, with Jondalar and Ayla last.
This is Jondalar of the Ninth Cave of the Zelandani, Master Flintknapper,
the master trader began, then continued with Ayla's introduction.
This is Ayla of the Ninth Cave of the Zelandani, formerly of the Lion Camp of the Mamutoi,
Willemar said. He noticed Ferendahl's expression change as he gave her names and ties, and especially when she greeted him and he heard her speak. The introductions, by inference, had told him quite a lot about the woman. First, that she was a foreigner, which was obvious when she spoke, who had been adopted as a full Zelandani in her own right, not just mated to someone who was a Zelandani, which was unusual in itself. Then that she belonged to the Zelandania and had become an acolyte of the First, and although the man was holding ropes that had been tied around two horses and was controlling them, she was given the credit for all the animals. It was obvious that she had power over the other horse and the wolf, even without ropes. It seemed to him that she must already be a Zelandani, not just an acolyte, even of the First. Then he remembered a troop of traveling storytellers a year or so back that had some new and wildly imaginative stories about horses carrying people and a wolf who loved a woman, but he never dreamed there could be any truth in them. Yet here they were. He hadn't seen the horses carrying people, but he was beginning to wonder how much truth was in those stories. A tall woman, whom Ayla thought looked somehow familiar, came forward and asked Willemar, "Did you say you were expecting to see Jondakam and Kimmeran here?"
"It has been a long time since you have seen them, hasn't it, Kimora?"
Willemar said. "Yes, it has," she said.
"You resemble your kin, especially your brother Jondakam, but Kimmeran too," Willemar said.
"We are all related," Kimora said, explaining to Ferendahl. "Kimmeran is my uncle, but he was much younger than his sister, who was my mother. When my mother's mother joined the spirits of the next world, my mother raised him like a son, along with Jondakam and me. Then, when the man to whom she was mated passed on to the next world, she became a Zelandani. It runs in her family. Her grandpa was also a Zelandani. I wonder if he still walks this world."
"Yes, he does, in fact, and while age has slowed his step, he is still Zelandani of the Seventh Cave. Your mother is now the spiritual leader of the Second," Willemar said.
"The one who was Zelandani of the Second Cave before her, the one who taught me to make images, walks the next world now," Jonicol added. "That was a sad day for me, but your mother is a good Danya." "Why did you think Kimmeran and Jondakam would be here?" Ferendahl asked. "They were supposed to leave shortly after we did and come straight here. We made stops along the way," the Zelandani who was First said. I am taking Ayla on her Danyar tour, and Jonicol, too. I should say Zelandani of the 19th. We never made much of a tour when he was my acolyte, and he needs to visit some of the sacred sites. From here we were all going to travel together to see one of the most important painted caves. It is in the southeast of Zelandani territory. And then we'll visit relatives of Kimaran's mate, Belladora. She is from the Giornadani, the people who live on the long peninsula that juts into the southern sea, south of the eastern Zelandani territory. As a young man, Kimaran traveled with his sister-mother on her Danyar tour to the northern end of the Giornadani territory. He met Belladora, mated her, and brought her back with him. The story is similar to Amelana's, the first said, indicating the pretty young woman in their group. But this young woman's story is much less fortunate. Her mate now walks in the next world, and she wanted to return to her own people. She misses her mother. She is carrying new life and would like to be near her mother when her child is born.
That's understandable, Kimora said, smiling sympathetically at Amelana. No matter how kind people may be, a woman always wants her own mother with her when she gives birth, especially the first time.
Ayla and the first exchanged quick glances. Kimora probably missed her people. Even though a woman might find a visitor from another place so attractive that she just had to go away with him, it apparently wasn't so easy to live with the strangers who were the kin of her mate. Though they might be people from the same territory, with beliefs and customs generally similar, each cave had its own ways, and a new person was always at a disadvantage in terms of status. Ayla recognized that her situation was not the same as the two young women. Although she was called Ayla of the Mamutoi, she had been more of a stranger to them than she had been to the Zelandani, and they to her. When she left the clan, she had hoped to find people like herself, but she didn't know where to look. She had lived alone in a pleasant valley for several years until she found Jandalar, who had been wounded by a lion. Except for him, the Mamutoi were the first of her kind she had met since she lost her family when she was a child of five. She had been raised by the clan, who were not just people of a different cave or territory, or with dissimilar hair or eyes or skin, or who spoke an unknown language. The people of the clan were genuinely different. Their language capabilities were distinctive, the way they thought, the way their brains functioned was unusual. Even the shape of their heads and to some extent their bodies were not quite the same. There was no doubt that they were people, and there were many similarities between them and the ones they called the others. They hunted the animals in their vicinity and gathered the food that grew. They shaped tools out of stone and with them made other objects like clothing and containers and shelters. They cared about each other and took care of each other and even recognized that Ayla was a child when they found her, and though she was one of the others, they took care of her. But they were different in some ways that, even though she grew up with them, she never fully understood. Though she sympathized with the young women who live far away from their families and missed them, she didn't fully empathize with them. At least they were living with people like themselves. She was grateful to have found her own kind, and especially to have found a man who cared about her among them. She couldn't even put into words how much she cared for Jandalar. He was more than she could ever have hoped for. He not only said he loved her, he treated her with love. He was kind, he was generous, he adored her daughter. If it weren't for him, she would not have been able to be an acolyte, to be a part of the Zelandania. He supported her, took care of Janela when she wasn't home, even though she knew he would rather she was there with him. And he could bring her to unbelievable joy when they shared pleasures. She trusted him implicitly and completely, and could not believe how fortunate she was. Kimura looked at the Zelandani who was first.
"Do you think something might have happened to Kimuran and John DeCam?" she asked with a worried frown. "Accidents can happen."
"Yes, they can, Kimura. But it could also be that they were delayed and didn't start as soon as they planned. Or something may have occurred at their cave that made them change their mind and decide not to go. They would have no way of letting us know. We will wait here a few days, if Farindal doesn't mind."
She glanced at him, and he smiled and nodded.
"Before we continue on our journey, to give them a chance to catch up."
"Perhaps we can do even more," Jandalar said. "Horses can travel much faster than people can. We can ride back along the trail they were on and see if we can find them. If they're not too far away, we might. At least we can try."
"That's a good plan, Jandalar," Ayla said.
"So they do carry you on their backs, like the storytellers said," Farindal said.
"Have the storytellers been here recently?"
Ayla asked.
"No, about a year ago, but I thought someone had just made up some remarkable new stories. I didn't know they were true," he said. "We'll start in the morning," Jandalar said. "It's too late now."
Everyone from the cave who could was gathered at the bottom of the slope that led up to the ledge where they lived. Ayla and Jandalar had tied riding baskets and carry baskets that held their camping gear and supplies on all three horses and put halters on the stallion and young mare. Then Jandalar lifted John Ayla up to Gray's back.
"Does that little girl control a horse, too?" Farindal wondered. "All by herself? She's so small, and a horse is a big, powerful animal, and those horses should be afraid of that wolf. Any time I've seen a wolf get close to a horse before, they would shy and run away, or if they thought one was ready to attack, they would try to trample it." "What kind of powerful magic does that woman have?" For a moment he felt a tingle of fear. Then he shook himself. She seemed like just an ordinary woman. She talked to the other women, helped with the work, tended to the children. She is an attractive woman, especially when she smiles, and except for her accent, you wouldn't think there was anything remarkable about her, or even unusual. Yet there she is, leaping up onto the back of that dun-yellow mare. He watched them start off, the man in the lead, the child in the middle, and the woman bringing up the rear. The man was big for the compact horse, which he called Racer. His feet nearly dragged the ground when he sat on the dark brown horse, an unusual color that he had not seen before. But as the animals began a fast trot, the man sat farther back on the horse, pulled up his knees, and hugged the body of the stallion with his legs. The girl sat forward, almost riding the neck of the taupe-colored young mare, her little legs sticking out. Again, the grayish-tan horse's coat was an unusual color, though he had seen it before when he'd made a trip north. Some called the taupe color Gruya. Ayla just called it gray, and it had become the mare's name. Not long after they started out, the fast trot speeded up to a gallop. Without encumbrances, like the pole drags, the horses liked to stretch their legs, especially on a morning ride. Ayla leaned forward, low on Winnie's neck, which was her signal to the horse to go as fast as she wished. Wolf yipped and joined in the sprint. Jandalar leaned forward as well, keeping his knees bent and close to the animal. John Ayla grabbed Gray's mane with one hand, and with her cheek resting high on the horse's neck while she squinted to see ahead, she wrapped her other arm around as best she could. With the wind in their faces, the fast ride was exhilarating, and the riders let the horses have their run and delighted in it. After they had worked out all the kinks, Ayla sat up somewhat. John Ayla sat lower near the base of Gray's neck, and Jandalar sat a little straighter and let his legs hang down. They all felt more relaxed and cantered on at a somewhat slower pace. Ayla gave Wolf a signal and said search, which he knew meant search for people. There were very few people on Earth at that time. They were far outnumbered by millions of other creatures, from the very large to the very small, and those humans who were there tended to cluster close together. When Wolf sampled all the smells that were in the wind, he could identify many different animals in various stages of life and death. He seldom detected the scent of human on the wind, but when he did, he knew it. The rest of them also searched, scanning the landscape to see if they could find any sign that people had passed by recently. They didn't think they would discover anyone so close, sure that the other party of travelers would have sent a runner ahead if they were in any kind of trouble and that close to their destination. Around midday, they took a break for a meal and to let the horses graze. When they continued, they scanned the countryside more intently. There was a trail of sorts that they followed, occasional blazes on trees, limbs on brush bent in certain ways, sometimes a small pile of stones tapering from front to back, and rarely a mark on a rock made with red ochre paint. They searched until sundown, then made camp and set up their traveling tents near an active stream that had begun as a spring on higher ground. Ayla took out some traveling cakes made with dried bilberries, rendered fat, and dried meat that had been ground with a pestle into small pieces and broke them into boiling water, then added some extra dried meat to the soup. Jandalar and John Ayla took a walk in the rather flat meadow nearby, and the child returned with her hands full of onions they had found, mostly by smell. The level ground had been a wetland earlier in the season, the result of the stream flooding, and as it dried, it became a suitable place for certain plants to grow. Ayla thought she might take a look at it the next morning to gather more onions and whatever else she might find. They started out the next day after their meal, finishing the soup made the night before, which included some additional roots and greens that Ayla had found in her quick exploratory hike around the area. Their second day was as disappointing as the first. They found no sign that any people had passed that way recently. Ayla did see tracks of many animals and began pointing them out to John Ayla, showing her the subtle aspects that indicated the movements of various creatures. By the time they stopped for a midday meal on the third day, both Jandalar and Ayla were feeling some concern. They knew how much Kimmeran and Jondakam wanted to see Kimora, and they knew that Belladora was anxious to visit her family. Had the ones they were expecting just not made the trip? Had something come up that caused them to cancel or postpone their planned journey, or had something happened to them along the way?
"We could go back to Big River and the first cave of Southland Zelindanyi and see if they made the crossing," Ayla said.
"You and John Ayla wouldn't have to make that long trip. I could go, and you could return to let everyone know. If we don't return in a few days, they'll be worrying about us," Jandalar said.
"You are probably right," Ayla said. "But let's keep looking, at least until tomorrow. Then we can decide."
They made camp late and avoided talking about the decision they knew they would have to make. In the morning, the air felt damp, and they noticed clouds had formed in the north. In the early morning, the wind was erratic, coming from every direction. Then it shifted and started blowing from the north with some strong gusts, which made the horses nervous as well as the people. Ayla always packed extra clothing for warmth in case of shifts in the weather or if they needed to be up late in the evening. The glaciers, beginning in the farthest north and laying like a huge pancake on the curved top of the earth, presented walls of solid ice more than 2 miles thick, only a few hundred miles away. On the hottest days of the summer, the nights were usually cool, and even the daytime weather could change abruptly. The north wind brought a chill and a reminder that even in summer, winter ruled the land. But the north wind brought something else as well.
In the bustle of striking camp and preparing a meal, no one noticed the shift in Wolf's posture. But a loud yip that was almost a bark got Ayla's attention. He was standing, almost leaning into the wind, with his nose high and forward. He had picked up a scent. Each time they started out from camp, she had given him the signal to search for people. The wolf's highly developed sense of smell had found something, some small whiff brought in by the wind.
"Look, Mother! Look at Wolf!"
John Ayla said. She had seen his bearing, too.
"He's located something," John Dalar said. "Let's hurry and finish packing."
They threw things into the pack baskets, much less neatly than usual, and tied them on the horses, along with the riding blankets, put the halters on Racer and Gray, doused the fire, and mounted.
"Find them, Wolf," Ayla said. "Show us which way to go."
She made the clan hand signals when she gave the command. The wolf headed north, but took a more easterly direction than they had been traveling. If what he had scented was the group they were supposed to meet, they seemed to have veered off the infrequently marked trail, or perhaps they had traveled into the eastern highland for some other reason. Wolf moved with single-minded purpose, using the ground-covering lope that was common to his species. The horses, with Whinny in the lead, followed behind. They traveled all morning and passed the time when they would normally have stopped for a midday meal. Ayla thought she caught a whiff of something burning. Then Jondalar called out to her.
"Ayla, do you see smoke ahead?"
She did see a faint trace of smoke rising in the distance and urged Whinny to a faster pace. She was holding Gray's lead rope, and glanced back at her beloved daughter on the young mare's back to make sure John Ayla was prepared for the increased speed. The girl smiled at her mother in excitement, which indicated that she was prepared. John Ayla loved riding her horse by herself. Even when her mother or Jondalar wanted her to ride in front on one of their mounts for safety because the trail was rough, or so she could rest and not have to hold on as firmly, the child resisted, though it seldom did any good. When they saw a camp with people around it, they slowed down as they approached. They weren't sure who the people were. Someone else could also be traveling, and rushing into a camp of strangers on the backs of horses could cause distress for everyone. Chapter 23 Then Ayla saw a man as tall as Jondalar with blonde hair. He also saw her.
"Kimran, we've been looking for you. I'm so glad we found you," Ayla said with relief in her voice.
"Ayla," Kimran said, "is it really you?"
"And how did you find us?"
Jondakam said. "How did you know where to look?"
"Wolf found you. He has a good nose," Ayla said.
"We went to Kimora's cave, expecting to meet you there, but they were surprised to see us," Jondalar said. "Everyone was getting worried, especially your sister, Jondakam. So I suggested we go back on the horses along the trail that I thought you would take, because they can go much faster than people."
"But we went off the trail to find a place to make a good camp when the children got sick," Lavila said. "You say the children are sick?" Ayla asked.
"Yes, and Belladora, too," Kimran said. "Maybe you shouldn't come too close. Jinadella got it first. She was hot, feverish. Then Lavila's son, John Levin, and then Belladora. I thought Chianaran might avoid it, but about the time that Jinadella started to get red spots all over her, he started getting feverish."
"We didn't know what to do for them, except let them rest, make sure they drank plenty of water, and try to cool the fever with wet compresses," Lavila said.
"You did the right thing," Ayla said. "I've seen something like this before, at the Mamutoi summer meeting, when I was spending a lot of time with the Mamuti. They are like the Zelendania, the ones who know the spirit world and are healers. One of the camps arrived with several people who were sick, mostly children.
The Mamuti made them stay at the far edge of the meeting camp and posted several Mamuti to make everyone else stay away. They were afraid most of the people at the summer meeting would get the sickness.
Then you should make sure that John Ayla doesn't play with the children, Lavila said, and you should stay away.
Are they still hot and feverish? Ayla asked.
Not much anymore, but they are full of red spots.
I'll take a look at them. But if they are not feverish, it may be all right. The Mamutoi think it is an ailment of childhood, and they say it is better if you get it as a child. Children tend to recover more easily, Ayla said. It's harder on adults.
That's true for Belladora. I think she was sicker than the children, Kimmeran said. She's still weak.
The Mamuti told me the fever is more intense and lingers, and the spots take longer to go away if you get it after you are grown, Ayla said.
Why don't you take me to see Belladora and the children?
Their tent had two tops, a primary pole held up the higher one, and a thin wisp of smoke was coming out of a hole near the top of that one. A smaller pole supported an extension of the tent, making more room. The entrance was a little low, and Ayla ducked to go inside. Belladora was lying on a sleeping roll in the enlarged area. The three children were sitting up on their bedrolls, but did not seem to feel very energetic. Three other sleeping places were in the other side, two together and one separate. Kimmeran came in after Ayla. He could stand erect near the pole in that section, but had to bend over or stoop to move around in the rest of the tent. Ayla first went to check on the children. The youngest, Lavila's son, John Levin, seemed to be over his fever, though he was still listless and covered with red spots that seemed to be itchy. He smiled when he saw Ayla.
"Where's John Ayla?" he asked.
The woman recalled that she liked to play with him. He could count 3 years to her four, but he was approaching her in height. She liked to play his mother, or sometimes his mate, and boss him around. They were cousins, since his mother Lavila was the sister of Proliva, who was mated to Jondalar's brother Joharan, close cousins that would not be allowed to mate.
"She's outside," Ayla said,
as she put the back of her hand on his forehead, felt that it wasn't abnormally hot, and his eyes didn't have the glazed look of fever.
"I think you are feeling better, aren't you? Not so hot anymore."
"I want to play with John Ayla."
"Not yet. Maybe in a little while," Ayla said.
She checked out Ginadella next. She also seemed well on the way to recovery, though her red spots were certainly colorful.
"I want to play with John Ayla, too," she said.
The twins could count 5 years, and just as Kimmeran and Jondalar resembled each other, both were tall and blonde, though they were not related. John Ayla and Ginadella were also blonde and fair with blue eyes, though John Ayla had the same vivid, startling blue color of Jondalar's eyes. Gianaran, Ginadella's twin, had rather dark brown hair and brownish-green hazel eyes like his mother, but he seemed to have some of Kimmeran's height. When Ayla put the back of her hand to his head, there was still some heat, and his eyes had the shiny look of fever. His spots were coming on strong, but they seemed a little raw, not as distinctly developed.
"I'll give you something to make you feel better in a little while," she said to the boy. "Would you like a drink of water now? Then I think you should lie down."
"All right,"
he said with a weak smile. She reached for the water bag and poured some into a cup that was beside his sleeping roll, then helped him hold it while he drank. He did lie down afterwards. Finally, she went to Belladora.
"How are you feeling?"
Ayla asked.
"I felt better," she said.
Her eyes were still glazed and she was sniffling.
"I'm really glad you're here. But how did you find us?"
"When you weren't at Kamora's cave,
We thought something must have delayed you. It was Jandalar's idea to take the horses and look for you. They can go faster than people, but it was Wolf who picked up your scent and brought us here, Ayla said.
I didn't realize how useful your animals could be, Belladora said. But I hope you don't get this sickness. It's terrible. And now I'm feeling itchy. Will these red spots go away?
They should fade soon, Ayla said, though it may take a while before they are completely gone. I'll fix something to help the itch and bring the fever down a little.
Everyone had crowded into the tent by then. Jandalar and Kimmeran were both standing by the taller pole. The rest were crowded around them.
I wonder why Belladora and the children got sick, but not the rest of us, Lavila said. At least not yet.
If you haven't by now, you probably won't, Ayla said.
I was worried that someone might have set evil spirits on us because they were jealous that we were making a journey, Belladora said.
I don't know, Ayla said. Did you anger anyone?
If I did, I didn't mean to. I was excited about seeing my family and my cave again. When I left with Kimmeran, I didn't know if I ever would. It might have seemed like I was bragging, Belladora said.
Did anyone at the first cave of Southland Zelindanyi talk about anyone who had stayed there before you? Or was anyone sick when you were there? Ayla asked Kimmeran.
Now that you mention it, some people did make a crossing before us, more than one group, and I think their Zelindani was taking care of someone who was sick, Kimmeran said. I didn't ask, though.
If there were evil spirits present, they may not have been directed at you. It may be that they were left over from the people who were there before you, Belladora.
But some sickness happens without anyone wishing it on you. It just seems to get passed around, Ayla said.
This fever with red spots might be one like that. If you get it when you are young, you don't usually get it after you are grown. That's what one mammut told me. My guess is that all of you had it when you were children, or you'd be sick too.
I think I do remember a time when a lot of us were sick at a summer meeting, John DeCam said. They put us all together in one tent, and once we got to feeling better, we felt special because we were getting so much attention. It was like a game. I think we had spots, too. Do any of you remember?
I was probably too young to remember, Lavila said.
And I was just enough older that I didn't pay any attention to younger children, sick or not, Jandalar said. If I didn't get sick then, I must have had it when I was so young I don't remember. What about you, Kimmeran?
I think I do remember, sort of, but only because my sister was in the Zelindania, the other tall man said. At a summer meeting, there's always so much going on, and youngsters from the same cave tend to stay together. They don't always notice what others are doing. What about you, Ayla? Have you had the red spot fever sickness?
I remember occasionally being sick and having a fever when I was growing up, but I don't remember if I ever had red spots with it, Ayla said. But I didn't get sick when I went with a mammut to the mammutoi camp that had the sickness, so that I could learn something about it and how to treat it. And speaking of that, I want to go out and see what I can find to help you feel better, Belladora. I have some medicines with me, but the plants I want grow almost everywhere, and I'd rather have fresh ones if I can find some.
Everyone filed out of the tent except Kimmeran, who stayed to look after Belladora and her children, as well as Lavila's child.
Can't I stay here, Mother, with them?
John Ayla asked, indicating the other children.
They can't play right now, John Ayla, her mother said. They need to rest, and I'd like you to help me find some plants that I can use to make them feel better.
What are you looking for?
Lavila asked when they got outside. Can I help you?
Do you know yarrow or common coltsfoot? I also want willow bark, but I know where that is. I saw some just before we got here.
Is yarrow the one with the fine leaves and tiny white flowers that grow together in a bunch? A little like carrots, with a stronger smell. That's one way you can tell the difference, from the smell, Lavila asked.
That is a very good description, Ayla said.
And coltsfoot?
Big, roundish, green leaves that are thick, white, and soft underneath.
You know that one, too.
Good. Let's go and find some, Ayla said.
Jondalar and Jondakam were standing by the fireplace outside the tent, talking, while Janela was nearby, listening.
Belladora and Gianarin still have some fever. We are going to look for some plants to help bring down the heat, and something to help the itchiness of all of them. I'll take Janela and Wolf.
We were just saying we should collect more wood, Jondalar said, and I was thinking that I should look for some trees that would make good poles for a pole drag or two. Even when Belladora and the children get better, they might not be up to a long walk, and we should start back to Kimora's cave before they start worrying about us.
Do you think Belladora will mind riding on a pole drag?
Ayla asked.
We've all seen the first riding on one. She seems to like it. I think it has made the idea less frightening, Lavila said. Why don't we ask her?
I need to get my gathering basket anyway, Ayla said.
I'll get mine too, and we should let Kimoran and Belladora know where we're going, Lavila said. And I'll tell John Levin we're going to get something to make him feel better.
He'll want to go, since he is better, especially when he finds out that Janela is going with you,
Jondakam said.
I know he will, Lavila said, but I don't think he should yet. What do you think, Ayla?
If I knew the area better and knew where we were going, it might be all right, but I don't think so yet.
That's what I'll tell him, Lavila said.
I'll take Belladora, Ayla said. Winnie is more accustomed to pulling a pole drag.
It had been several days since they found the missing families, but Belladora still wasn't entirely recovered. If she pushed herself too soon, Ayla was afraid she might end up with a chronic problem that could make the rest of the journey more difficult. She didn't add that Racer would not be a good horse to pull her travois because he was harder to control. Even Jondalar, who was very good with him, sometimes had difficulty when the stallion got a bit fractious. Gray was still young, Janela even younger in terms of ability, and with Winnie dragging the travois behind her, it would be more difficult for Ayla to use the lead rope to help her daughter control the horse. She wasn't sure that they should make a pole drag for Gray. However, the large tent the other travelers had been camping in while people were sick was assembled from their smaller traveling tents and some extra hides, and the third travois could hold the tent poles and other things they had made while they had stopped that they might otherwise have left behind. The children were very much improved, but still tired easily. The pole drags would also provide a place for them to rest while they were traveling, without having to stop. Ayla and Jondalar wanted to return as quickly as possible. They were sure the ones who were waiting for them were wondering where they were. The night before they planned to leave, they organized as much as they could so they could leave quickly. Ayla, Jondalar, Janela, and Wolf used their own traveling tent. In the morning, they made a quick meal of the leftovers from the night before, packed everything on the pole drags, including the back frames they usually wore to carry their essentials, shelter, additional clothing, and food, with them. Though the adults were used to carrying them, they found it much easier to walk without the heavy loads. They got off to a good start and traveled farther than they customarily did, but by evening, most people were tired.
While they were drinking the last of their evening tea, Kimmeran and John DeCam brought up the idea of stopping early to go hunting so they would have something to bring with them when they met Kimora's relatives. Ayla was concerned. The weather had cooperated so far. There had been a little shower the night Ayla and Jandalar found the other travelers. It cleared up after that, but Ayla didn't know how long it would stay that way. Jandalar was aware that she had a good nose for weather and usually knew when rain was coming. It wasn't exactly a smell that suggested rain. She thought of it as a special tang in the air and often a damp feel. In later times, some would refer to the ozone in the atmosphere before rain as fresh air. Others, who had the ability to detect it, thought it had a metallic tinge. Ayla didn't have a name for it and found it hard to explain, but she knew it, and she had perceived that hint of coming rain recently. Slogging through mud and pouring rain was the last thing she wanted to do right now. Ayla woke up when it was still dark. She got up to use the night basket, but stepped outside instead. There was still a glow from the coals in the fireplace in front of the tent that gave enough light for her to go to a nearby bush instead. The air was cool but fresh, and as she headed back to the tent, she noticed that the true black of night had shaded into the midnight blue of pre-dawn. She watched for a while as a rich, deep red flooded the eastern sky, highlighting a mottled pattern of dark purple clouds, followed by a dazzling light that turned the red sky more fiery and spread the clouds out into bands of vibrant color.
"I'm sure it's going to rain soon," she said to Jandalar when she went back into the tent. "And it is going to be a big storm. I know they don't want to arrive empty-handed, but if we keep going, we might get there before the rain starts. I would not want Belladora to get wet and cold just as she is getting better, and I dislike the idea of having everything get wet and muddy when if we hurry, we might avoid it."
The rest woke up early, planning to start out not long after sunup. Everyone could see dark clouds gathering on the horizon, and Ayla was sure they would soon be in for a downpour.
"Ayla says a big storm is coming," Jandalar told the other two men when they brought up hunting. "She thinks it would be better to hunt later, after we get there."
"I know there are clouds in the distance," Kimmeran said, "but that doesn't mean it will rain here. They look pretty far off."
"Ayla has a good sense of rain coming," Jandalar said. "I've seen it before. I don't necessarily want to have to dry out wet clothes and muddy footwear."
"But we only met them at the matrimonial," John DeCam said. "I don't want to ask for their hospitality with nothing to give in return."
"We were only there a half a day before we left to look for you, but I noticed that they don't seem to be familiar with the spear thrower. Why don't we ask them to come hunting with us and show them how to use it? That might be a better gift than just bringing them some meat," Jandalar said.
"I suppose. Do you really think it's going to rain that soon?" Kimmeran asked.
"I trust Ayla's nose for rain. She is seldom wrong," Jandalar said. "She's been smelling rain for a few days, and she thinks it will be a big storm, not one that we'll want to get caught in without good shelter. She doesn't even want to stop to cook a midday meal. She says we should just drink water and eat traveling cakes along the way so we can get there faster. Now that Belladora is getting well, I don't think you want her to get soaked."
Suddenly he had another thought.
"We could get there more quickly, riding on the horses."
"How can we all ride on three horses?" Kimmeran asked.
"Some people could ride on the pole drags, and others double up on the horses. Have you ever thought about sitting on a horse? You could sit behind John Ayla."
"Maybe someone else could sit on a horse. I've got long legs, and I can run fast," Kimmeran said.
"Not as fast as a horse," Jandalar said. "Her two children can ride on the pole drag with Belladora. It would be a bumpy ride,
but they have already done it a few times. We could move the gear on Racer's pole drag to Gray's. Then Lavila and John Levin can ride double on Racer with me. That leaves you and John DeCam. I thought he could ride on the pole drag. Or he can ride behind me and Lavila, and her young one can be on the pole drag. That leaves you riding double with Ayla or John Ayla. With your long legs, it would give you more room if you ride with John Ayla, since she rides so close to Gray's neck. Do you think you could hang on to a horse with your legs while you're sitting on her? You could also hold on to the pole drag ropes. Whoever rides double with me can hang on to me. We won't ride too long like that. It would tire the horses. But we could cover a good bit of ground a lot faster if we let them run for a little while. I see you've been thinking about this, John DeCam said. Only since Ayla told me of her concerns, John DeLar said. What do you think, Lavila?
I don't want to get wet if I can avoid it, she said. If Ayla says it's going to rain, I believe her. I'll ride a pole drag with John Levin like Belladora, if it means we'll get there faster, even if it is a little bumpy.
While the water was heating for tea, the loads on the pole drags were rearranged, and Ayla and Jondalar got everyone settled. Wolf was watching from the side with his head tilted at an angle, as though he was curious about what was going on, which was emphasized by his cocked ear. Ayla caught sight of him and smiled. They started out slowly at first, then with a look between them, Jondalar signaled Ayla, then gave a shout.
Get ready and hold on tight, he said.
Ayla leaned forward, instructing her horse to run. Winnie started into a fast trot, then her gait changed to a gallop. Though it wasn't as fast as it would have been if she hadn't been dragging the travois, she did gain considerable speed. The horses behind followed her lead at the urging of their usual riders and picked up their pace. Wolf ran along beside them. It was exhilarating for John DeCam and Kimmeran, and breathtaking, if a little frightening, for those holding on tight to the pole drags as they bumped over the rough ground. Ayla paid close attention to her horse, and when Winnie started to labor under the strain, she slowed her down.
"Well, that was exciting," Belladora said. "That was fun," both the twins said together. "Can we do it again?"
Ginadella asked.
"Yes, can we do it again?"
Gianarin asked.
"We'll do it again, but we have to let Winnie rest a little now," Ayla said.
She was pleased with the distance they had traveled in their short burst of speed, but they still had some ways to go. They kept going, but at a walk. After she felt that her horse was rested, Ayla called out,
"Let's do it again!"
When the horses started running, the riders hung on, knowing now what to expect. The ones who had been frightened were not as frightened this time, but it was still exciting to move with greater speed than any of them could have run, even those with the longest of legs. The native wild horses, which had been tamed but not domesticated, were very strong and tough. Their hooves needed no protection from rocky ground. They could carry or pull a surprisingly heavy load, and their endurance was well beyond what might be expected, though they loved to run. The horses with the extra loads could sustain the pace for only a limited time, which Ayla watched very carefully. By the time she slowed them back to a walk, and after a while signaled them to take off in a run a third time, the horses even seemed to be enjoying it. Wolf did, too. It seemed like some kind of game. He tried to anticipate when they would start to run again and get a head start, but he didn't want to get too far ahead because he was keeping pace and needed to predict when they would slow down. By late afternoon, Ayla and Jondalar were beginning to recognize the region, though they weren't sure, and didn't want to miss the trail they needed to take to reach the cave of Kimora's people. It had been Willemar who knew the region. Going at a slower pace made everyone notice the changes in the weather. The air was damp, and the wind had started to pick up. Then they heard a resounding rumble
and the roaring crack of thunder, and not long after saw a flash of lightning, and it wasn't very far away. They all knew a big storm was almost upon them. Ayla began to shiver, but it wasn't just the sudden blast of cold, damp air. The rumbling and roaring reminded her too much of an earthquake, and there was nothing she hated more than earthquakes. They almost missed the trail, but Willemar and some of the others had been keeping a watch for them for several days. Jondalar was very relieved when he saw the familiar figure waving at them. The trade master had seen the horses approaching from some distance away and had sent one of the people up to tell the cave that the horses were returning. At a distance, when Willemar didn't see anyone walking alongside the horses, he was afraid they hadn't found anyone, but as they drew closer, he saw more than one head above the backs of the horses and realized they were riding together. Then he saw the pole drags, and as they pulled up, people on them. People from the cave were rushing down the path. When Kimora saw her brother and her uncle, she didn't know which to run to first. They solved her dilemma when both of them ran to her and hugged her together.
"Hurry, it's starting to rain," Willemar urged.
"We can leave the pole drags here," Ayla said.
Then they all hurried up the trail. The travelers stayed longer than planned, partly to give Kimora a chance to visit with her kin, and for her mate and children to get to know them. The cave was a more isolated band of people, and though they went to summer meetings, they didn't have any close neighbors. Jondakam and Lavila considered staying with Jondakam's sister, perhaps until the travelers could stop and pick them up on their way back. She seemed hungry for company and news about people she knew. Kimaran and Belladora definitely planned to leave when the first did. Belladora's people lived at the end of their proposed journey. The first had been hoping to leave within a few days, but Janela came down with measles as they were getting ready to go, which delayed their departure. The three Zelandania among the travelers gave remedies and instructions to the resident cave on how to care for those who developed the contagious disease, explaining that they were likely to get sick too, but that usually it wasn't too serious. The local Zelandani had become acquainted with the first and Jonicol, while Ayla and Jondalar were looking for the others and had grown to respect their knowledge. The people of the Ninth Cave told stories of their experiences with the sickness and made it seem so commonplace that the people didn't feel quite as nervous about getting sick with it. Even after Janela started to feel better, Zelandani decided that they should postpone leaving until the people of the cave started to show symptoms, so the three of them could explain how to care for those who got sick and what herbs and poultices would be helpful. Many of the cave did get sick, but not all of them, which made the first think that at least some of the people had been exposed to measles before. Zelandani and Willemar knew there were some sacred sites in the region and talked about them with Farnadal and their Danyar. The first knew of them, but had not seen them. Willemar had, but it had been many years before. The sites were related to the major painted cave near the seventh cave of Southland Zelandanyi, just as the one near the fourth Southland cave was, and they were sacred sites. But from the descriptions, there wasn't much to see, just a few rough paintings on stone walls. They had already been delayed so long that the first decided they could omit those sites on this Danyar tour, so they would have time to see some others. It was more important to see the very major sacred site that was not far from Amalana's cave, and they still had to make a visit to the neighboring Giornadanyi and Belladora's cave. The wait gave the Ninth Cave an opportunity to get to know the people of Kimora's cave better, and Jondalar in particular, the opportunity to demonstrate the spear thrower and show how to make one to those who wanted to learn. The wait also gave Jondakam and Lavila more time to visit with Kimora and their relatives, and when the travelers left, they were ready to go with them. During the extended visit, the two caves had become quite friendly,
and they talked about a reciprocal visit sometime. For all the camaraderie, the visitors were anxious to be on their way, and the people of the cave were thankful when they were gone. They were not accustomed to many visitors, unlike the ninth cave, which was located in the midst of a richly populated region. It was one reason that Kimora still missed her family and friends. She was determined to make sure the cave did make a return visit, and if she could, she was going to persuade her mate to stay. After they started out again, it took the travelers a few days to settle back into a comfortable itinerant mode. The composition of the new group of travelers was quite different from the one they had started out with, primarily because there were more of them, and more children, which prolonged the time it took to move from place to place. As long as it had been just John Ayla, who often rode Gray, they moved at a fairly rapid pace, but with two more youngsters who were old enough to use their own legs, and a younger one who wanted to walk because the other children did, their rate of travel had inevitably slowed. Ayla finally made the suggestion that Gray should pull a pole drag for the three children to use while John Ayla rode on her back. That helped the travelers to move a little faster. The trekkers settled into a very practical routine, with all of them contributing to the well-being of the group in their own way. As the season progressed and they continued in their southerly direction, the days grew warmer. It was generally pleasant, except for an occasional rainstorm or muggy heat spell. When they were traveling or working in warm weather, men often wore a breech clout and perhaps a vest, plus their decorative and identifying beads. Women usually wore a loose, comfortable, sleeveless dress with slits up the sides for ease of walking, made of soft buckskin or woven fibers that went on over their head and tied at the waist. But as the weather warmed, even light clothing could be too much, and they stripped down more. Both men and women sometimes wore only a thong or short fringed skirt and some beads, the children not even that, and their skins turned nut brown. A natural tan, slowly acquired, was the best protective sunscreen, and though they didn't know it, a healthy way to absorb certain essential vitamins. Zelandani was becoming more accustomed to walking, and Ayla thought she was getting slimmer. She had little trouble keeping up, but she always insisted upon riding on her pole drag when they arrived at a new location. People made a commotion when they saw her being pulled by a horse, which she felt added to the mystique of the Zelandania and to the position of the first among those who served the Great Earth Mother. Their route, which was worked out by Zelandani and Willemar, took them south through open woods and grasslands, along the west side of a massif, a highland that was the leftover stump of ancient mountains ground down by the passage of time, with volcanoes forming new mountains on top of the old. Eventually they turned east, swinging around the bottom of the central highland, and then continued traveling east between the southern end of the highland and the north shore of the southern sea. As they traveled, they often saw game, birds, and animals of many kinds, but except when they stopped to visit settlements, no people crossed their path. Ayla found herself truly enjoying the company of Lavila and Belladonna and Amalana when they weren't visiting another cave or summer meeting. They did things together with their children. Amalana's pregnancy was beginning to show, but she was no longer troubled by morning sickness, and the walking was beneficial for her. She felt well, and her vibrant good health, along with her obvious show of maternity, made her even more attractive to Tavonin and Paladar, Willemar's assistants. But as they continued the Danyar tour, stopping to visit various caves, summer meetings, and sacred sites, there were many young men who found her equally attractive, and she enjoyed the attention. Since Ayla was often with Zelandani, the young women were learning some of the knowledge that Zelandani was teaching her acolyte. They listened, and sometimes joined in on their discussions about various things,
medicinal practices, identifying plants, ways of counting, meaning.